We will move to item number 23, Deer Action Plan. And I know Andy's with us today. Welcome back, Andy.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Andy Lindblom, Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City, and today I'm here to provide some updates on our Deer Action Plan. I believe you as a commission have a draft of that right now, and hopefully I've had a chance to at least give it a quick review. Looking forward to your comments and your edits as we move to finalize this over the next month or two. I believe we'll be bringing you a final action plan in May for adoption, if you so choose. So not only do you have it now, but not also the public has it now. So we're also, we have it out for public review and looking forward to comments from the public on this as well. Of course, we have involved the stakeholder group on this development of the action plan. We've also done a public opinion survey. I believe Stephanie Buckley will be talking with the commission about those here in a couple months. But yeah, today I'm here to just kind of go over a quick overview of what the action plan looks like. So there's five main sections to the action plan. There's a population monitoring, a wildlife damage management, and citizens involvement and outreach sections. And those are kind of 10,000 foot overviews of those different topics. And then what I'm going to focus on my time on today in the interest of time is are the sections involving population objectives and then our management objectives and strategies. So we basically have three different types of population objectives that we manage for with regards to deer. We do have some hunt quality objectives. We do have a population abundance objective, and all of our units do have population change objectives. So for hunt quality, we have two different types of hunt quality objectives. One of them is a license density threshold. So basically, these are areas that we're managing for low hunter density. Of course, this does come at a cost of some opportunity, right? So there are a limited number of areas that we do this. The two areas that we do it are limited access units, which would be 27L and 35L, the Hill Ranch in Custer National Forest, and then Custer State Park. For our other hunting seasons, we do have hunter success thresholds, and these are basically trying to set the bar for some minimum level of hunter success for those folks that have a buck tag. So, for example, in our limited access areas, we have a success threshold of 75%. So that means if we have multiple years where we are not meeting that that success threshold for a license that contains an any deer or any whitetail, we're probably going to reduce those number of licenses so that we can increase that success. We have a lot of years where we're exceeding that. That gives us an opportunity to offer some more buck hunting in that unit. So our highest, as you might imagine, is our limited access units at 75%. Black Hills is 60%. It previously was 70. So this is a change. We are lowering that success threshold to provide some additional buck hunting opportunity in the hills. For West River Deer, it's 60%. East River Deer and National Wildlife Refuge Firearm, it's 50%. And then National Wildlife Refuge Muzzleloader is 40%. And obviously these aren't the same success thresholds across the board. And the reason being is we went back and we looked at historical harvest data and success data for those areas, for those seasons, and tried to pick a reasonable success threshold to shoot for that was kind of at the high end. So we wanted to base it off of historical data. So the next objective I want to talk about is our population abundance objective. We have one area, the Black Hills, and for white-tailed deer, that's the only area and the only species we have an abundance objective, and that objective is 70,000. And usually right after I say that, the next question is, well, why just the Black Hills and why just white-tail? And also, since I have a slide of elk, why do we have a picture of elk on a deer objective slide? They're all related, really. Back when we developed our elk management plan, and we established an elk objective, one of the main considerations and discussion points was, is there enough forage in the Black Hills for this elk objective, not only for elk, but also for livestock. And because we were looking at forage availability to make sure we had enough for elk and livestock, we also want to make sure we had enough for our most abundant ungulate in the hills, and that's white-tailed deer. And so we wanted to make sure there was enough forage there. We set an objective that was within that forage allocation, so we came up with 70,000. We're not there right now, and we're not sure if that's going to be the final number. We'll see how it feels when we get to 70,000 deer, but right now that's what we're shooting for. And the last but not least, as far as population objectives, probably the most important is, as you're aware of a commission, as a commission, that every unit in the state, we have a change objective of increase, decrease, or maintain. Of course, we use our biological data and our modeling exercises to try and meet those objectives. And I've talked about all the different data sets that we use, and I'm not going to go over those today. But I do want to talk about the social data, and that's really what drives what those objectives are. You know, we have staff throughout the year working and living in these communities, getting a lot of input from our hunters and from our landowners and from the general public on what the deer populations are like and where they need to be. And so we use those data to inform and direct us in social in deciding what those objective directions are. And so here's where we're at. For both white-tailed deer and mule deer, and you've seen these maps before, and they're in the action plan. Different colors indicate different objectives. Green is maintain. A shade of blue means an increased objective, and a shade of red would mean a decreased objective. And as you can see, they vary across the state by unit and by species. But we evaluate each unit independently and to decide what these objectives are. So last, I want to talk about real briefly our management objectives and strategies. Not going to go over all of them, just going to hit a few high points, talk about a few of the objectives, and talk about a few of the changes. So the first objective is our objective one, and I just talked about this, and that's to manage for biologically and socially acceptable deer populations, and we just kind of went over that. Our second objective is to manage our hunting opportunity, both fairly and equitably. And of course, this is always a challenge. There's a lot of different user groups in the state that enjoy deer hunting. But our first strategy underneath that objective, and one I know you've heard before and you're going to hear again, I'm sure, and that's to maximize our hunting opportunity for unique hunters and to minimize regulation complexity. And I know in the coming months, we as a department and you as a commission, we're going to have discussions about potential regulation changes to our deer seasons and what that might look like. And really the impetus behind a lot of those discussions is this objective, and that is trying to maximize hunting opportunity for unique hunters. Also under objective two, we have a strategy that outlines how we allocate archery and muzzleloader antlerless harvest opportunities. So currently, let's talk a little bit about how we do it right now. So if we have a firearm unit that has no antlerless licenses, that unit is automatically closed for archery and muzzleloader antlerless hunting. It's not in that LM1 unit. If that firearm unit adds any additional antlerless licenses, like 10 or 20, that automatically opens up that unit to unlimited archery and muzzleloader antlerless hunting. So the gas is either all the way off or all the way on for archery and muzzleloader. And our managers and our biologists had a lot of discussion about this, and what we're looking for is kind of an in-between. And here's what we come up, and this is on the table for discussion. What we're proposing is if we have between 0 and 50 firearm antlerless tags, then we're going to let the managers case by case evaluate whether or not we can completely open that up or completely keep it closed. If we have more than 50, then it's automatically going to be open up to archery and muzzleloader. So it kind of provides an in-between. And last but not least, as we all know, you know, the priority of our department is to manage for more habitat, right, and for more access. And without a doubt, that's a priority of this deer plan. You know, we have a lot of great habitat programs out there that improve habitat for a lot of wildlife species. And, you know, we're having discussions on how we can maybe tailor some of those that would benefit deer in addition to other species. So looking forward to those discussions and seeing where we come out. But, yeah, both the habitat and access are a big priority for this action plan. And with that, that's all I have. And open up for any questions.
Very good. Any questions or comments at this time? Just real quick, the stakeholder groups, are you done meeting with the stakeholders, or will there be more leading to the final version that we all work on?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we've had two meetings, I believe, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. We've had a couple different management plans going on in groups, but I believe we've had two different meetings. And I think the intent was to circle back around in one form or fashion with the stakeholder group and talk about the finalized plan, whether that's a virtual option or an in-person. I don't think that decision has been made yet.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Bees, did you have a question?
No, I was thinking about one, but I haven't got there yet.
Commissioner Bees,
you were mentioning you wanted to get to 70,000 head in the Black Hills. Where are we at now, about that 35, 40,000 range? Something like that, if I remember right, in preface. And then how long do you think it'll take to obtain that 70,000? What's the biggest hurdle to get there to obtain that objective?
Yeah, so if your first question, we're probably around 40,000 deer right now, I believe, is our latest estimate based on our spotlight survey. We're also currently in the process of evaluating trail camera surveys to estimate abundance in the Black Hills. We have, 250 randomly placed cameras in the hills that may provide us a better estimate of abundance for deer in the Black Hills. So more to come on that later. But right now, yeah, we believe we're around that 40,000. Obviously, the big hurdle for any of our populations is recruitment and or adult female survival. We don't have any radio callers out right now on adults, so I can't give you any updates on that. But recruitment is something we continue to monitor. I can't tell you off the top of my head what recruitment is for white-tailed deer in that unit, but I don't believe that we had any alarming trends there.
Additional questions, Commissioner Cole.
Can you just take us through, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but can you take us through what happens in a timeline, a chronological order, and like by one of the units setting the season dates in that unit? I think what I'm really trying to get at is if something happens, is a plan set up so far in advance that you can't go back and do it? I mean, who has the, I know about the stakeholder groups, but where does it start, and how do we get, say, Hughes County had some crazy die-off this year. How was that addressed by county in that region or in the whole state as a picture? What's the order of how it works?
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Commissioner Cole, that's a good question. So for example, your example of a die-off, and we do see that with, for example, white-tailed deer with hemorrhagic disease. Of course, we monitor those every year. And if we were to have a big enough die-off, we obviously have the option to come to the commission and pull licenses. We've done that in the past. We've pulled unsold licenses. We offer refunds for folks that are hunting in areas that have been hit hard by hemorrhagic disease. So we do have some immediate response options in that situation.
And just a follow-up to that, I don't know how long ago it's been. As I get older, things go into decades. But I can remember public meetings where deer has been a hot topic in the southeast where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember those meetings happening. Are those happening now? Did they happen prior to a stakeholder group? Are they going to happen yet? That's one question that I'm asked a lot. We specifically in our southeast, well, all the way from Julie pretty much to the Iowa border, you know, we've been asked about that. And I don't know what you do and how that works.
Sorry. No, Madam Chair, Commissioner Cole, that's a good question, and I'll certainly let Director Kirschman or Secretary Roebling chime in on this as an agency. But we have over the years done different formats of public meetings. We've had regional groups where they meet frequently throughout the regions with different members of the public, open in different communities. We've done that. We haven't done anything recently that I'm aware of specific to deer. But our primary public input opportunity, obviously, is with the commission. It's through the development of our action plan. It's with our stakeholder group meetings. We also did a public opinion survey, again, that you'll hear some information about. Those are our primary sources of public input, at least for the development of this action plan.
And we do have Director Kirschman is going to jump on a mic here.
I would just add, commissioners, that as Andy just described, there are a lot of local meetings typically which happen where our conservation officer or wildlife damage specialist staff or some of our biologists in a given area will meet with sportsmen groups, things like that. We may not necessarily set up a unique individual public meeting to just come in and talk about it, but some of those conversations do occur. In particular, it's nice to have them prior to us going through our process of setting seasons, license allocations, so on and so forth. We can gather more public input that way above and beyond our normal means of gathering input. When it comes to the action plans and kind of overall direction, that's where we really have relied on the stakeholder groups because we can bring in groups, organizations from across the state, different backgrounds, different interests, and have a very good collective but broad-based conversation to pull together alternatives and recommendations for you as a commission.
Any follow-up, Commissioner? Commissioner?
Commissioner
Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Sorry, question for Andy. Okay, so color-impaired vision I've got. You got dark brown, light brown, and dark brown again on the substantial increase. Sorry about that. In the Northeast, is that the substantially decrease, or is that... slightly, or what is that? In figure two, I'm sorry.
Through the chair.
Yes, please.
Mr. Whitmire, in the Northeast, that would be, I believe, green from this distance. So I think most of that is a maintain.
Maintain.
Yep, there are some units in the Northeast where our objective is to decrease, which would be signified by the light red there.
Secretary Roebling.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And that was going to be my comments as well. I mean, as far as how we manage deer populations in the state is on page 98. And that is where I need the commission to really spend a lot of time in determining, is that the right objective? Because as a Game Fish and Parks agency, then we will take that license allocation and adjust accordingly based on that map. This map is absolutely critical to the direction we're going to manage these populations towards. So this is the map on page 98, the figure we were just referencing, that this is the one we want to talk to our constituent base about. Do we have too many deer? Not enough deer? Do we have just about the right number of deer? And then we take that and utilize those data, that social, data to then make those recommendations that you will see here every other year. And that's the critical component of managing deer throughout South Dakota. So please focus on that piece if you may.
Thank you, Secretary. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Beast.
Sure, Beast. I've been sitting here looking at this map while you've been talking, doing the substantially increased area. That's a big area. So what type of measures to substantially increase, what type of measures are we going to use to do that? I mean, we still got to offer hunting opportunities, of course, but how do we get substantially increased?
Yes, sure.
What measures do you use to do that?
Yeah, Commissioner Beast, that's a good question. And obviously our primary tool that we have available for us is to remove antlerless harvest. And in most of those areas, we've removed most antlerless harvest hunting opportunities. So we can still allow for some buck hunting and still increase populations, but controlling the antlerless harvest is going to be the main tool that we have available.
Commissioner Cole?
Just one follow-up. The chronological order I asked, I think that's something that's I'm really concerned with, or that's the questions I'm getting. So like this hunting season that we just finished, if Hughes County, from the word that you hear from most of the people, is half the deer were there. Okay. Let's say that you find out that that is correct. Do you react to that for the next season? that's the question that I think a lot of people are asking. And I think they've been skewed about two-year plans. And they go, no, no, the Game Fish and Parks doesn't do anything for 2 years. And I thought, no, 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 that's, you know, so that's what I kind of meant, where the local CO gets involved, the groups you're talking about, all the way through the district, you know, is it handled like in real time, I guess, is kind of what I'm asking. I don't know if that's you or Secretary or Kirschman or Secretary Roebling.
Through the chair, Commissioner Cole, I'll take a stab at that. And then maybe somebody will have something to add to that. But yeah, that's a good question. I mean, as you know, our recommendations, when we bring license numbers to you, those are two-year recommendations. Our intent is for those to ride out for 2 years. But there are extenuating circumstances where those need to be modified, whether it's a disease loss or substantial winter mortality. In fact, I do believe next meeting, you as a commission will be considering some of our recommendations for proposal regarding modification of some deer license numbers in the southeast part of the state, just for some of the reasons that you've brought up. But normally, they are two-year recommendations.
That answer.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I've got one.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
I was just saying, Commissioner Call, I would just add to what Andy said, and he's spot on with it. What I want to make very clear is that two-year recommendation process that we go through, there's nothing written in stone that it has to be 2 years. That is simply a process that you as a commission and us as a department have adopted to move forward. Now, what that does mean is, Andy just described, should we have a disease issue die off, a significant weather event, whatever it means, and it causes for action to adjust and have considerations before that 2 year time frame, you as a commission, we as a department can always act upon it. And we've done that before as well. We've taken steps in between that 2 year recommendation. So it is a process, but it is nowhere set. For example, in statute, rule, or something that we have to follow that. That's just our process, and we can deviate if necessary and when needed.
Very good. Any additional questions, Commissioner Beast?
I pretty much knew your answer when was on the antlerless harvest, but are we going to do that across the board with all seasons? Because the rifle hunters can't bear the brunt of no antlers tagged. Are we going to get into the muzzleloader archery and cut those antlerless tags to help increase these substantially increased areas? I mean, it can't just be one. It's got to be across the board plan, I would think. Are we doing any planning on that strategy to do that, or are we just doing antlerless rifle tags?
To the chair.
Yes,
Commissioner Bees. No, that's a good question. And yeah, yes, we are, I guess, is a short answer. Our archery and muzzleloader tags right now are any antlerless whitetail, right? So that there is not any antlerless deer.
I'll even elaborate on that a bit further. There are going to be areas of the state where you can't get any antlerless whitetail tag. So it is dependent upon the management objective that we're trying to achieve. And it comes down to a couple things. Winter severity is going to play a huge role, and so is disease that we don't have necessarily control of, and we're going to respond to that. The way we can really quantify some of that loss or just the overall availability of deer is through hunter success rates. So once we get those surveys back, we can see those hunter success rates. If they go from 60% success down to 30, we have a problem. I mean, that's a lot of times, with the exception of 2009-10, when we had all that corn still in across eastern South Dakota, those deer were still there. They just weren't accessible to the hunter. Those anomalies do happen, and we can tease those things out. But ultimately, when we look at the data we have in hand and we see that, you know, recruitment's good, survival's good, you know, we will grow deer. There's no doubt we will continue growing deer, but we will have events then we have to respond to. And that's the whole idea behind having really good data, is that we can be proactive in making those moves a little quicker, so we're not 2 or 3 years behind. And we've done that in the last 10, 15 years with our big game program. Super proud of that. So that we'll continue doing that. But again, it comes back down to this map. As a manager, this map is absolutely critical in how we dictate then where the antlerless harvest occurs, how much of it occurs, based on all these different covariates. And that's something that, you know, as far as managing big game, the data